Hello and welcome to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. My name is Kat Johnson and I'm kicking off all of our coverage for Slow Food Nations in Denver in 2019. And I'm not quite yet at Slow Food Nations because we are doing an event right before the festivities kick off at SOFTA here in Denver. And I'm here with Chef Alon Chaya. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Thank you, Kat. Really, really glad you're here.
We're so excited. So we have been planning this dinner with your team, with our team at Heritage Radio Network, and with the team at New Food Economy, because we are launching a very exciting collaboration and you're helping us kick it off. We're going to be starting a podcast called The Digest, yes. Combining the best of both of our newsrooms and our media capabilities. So thank you so much for having us and
totally,
being so generous.
Totally. We couldn't do any of this without The Digest.
Yes.
You know, like, you have to be able to digest at some point.
We have to digest physically and mentally.
And mentally.
So that's
right.
That's what we're aiming to do.
Good.
So we're going to have some incredible supporters of, I think, all three of our organizations. We're going to have Dana Cowan here co-hosting the dinner with
us. That's incredible.
We're so excited.
I'm a huge fan.
Yes, we all are. She hosts the Speaking Broadly on Heritage Radio Network. We're going to have the great Alice Waters.
An up-and-comer. Yep. Out of California, I've heard. I've heard she was around.
Yes, I think she's been at all three Slow Food Nations, and we are thrilled that we are a part of her schedule for this year.
Alice is one of my biggest inspirations, and Emily, my wife, as well. We just absolutely adore her and try to spend as much time with her as we can. She's incredible, and I'm really nervous and excited and anxious that she's coming in for dinner at SOFTA tonight.
So tell us about the menu that you have planned for us tonight.
Yeah, we are tapping into all of these beautiful local farms. Denver right now is just blossoming with the most incredible produce. And so we're using lettuces from Isabel Farms. We're using vegetables from Red Wagon Farms, like really beautiful cucumbers and fresh cherries. We're using lamb from Boulder Lamb Company, and we have these gorgeous lamb shoulders that we're going to serve with morel mushrooms and fresh cherries. So, like, that's going to be really tasty. And I also think we're doing some hummus and salatine and some pita bread. So I think the table's going to be happy.
I'm looking at you right now, and your hat says pita on it.
Yes.
And when we interviewed you last year, you also had the pita hat on.
Yes.
Why is pita the word that goes on the hat?
Because I think it serves as such like a foundation for like what we do at Saba and SOFTA. Like, the pita bread coming out of the wood oven for me is really part of what defines the restaurant experience. And that's why I have a hat named pita. But, you know, I never heard, like, I always thought like people might get it confused with like the animal rights, group or, but what I've learned is that people think that PETA is short for pain in the ass. And I'd never heard that in my entire life until I started wearing this hat. And people would walk up to me and they'd be like, "So are you?" And I'm like, "What?" They're like, "Pain in the ass?" I'm like, "No, it's PETA bread. It's like the bread. Yeah.
Well, that brings me to something, because one thing I wanted to talk to you about was this incredible profile that Wendell Brock wrote about you in The Bitter Southerner. I'm a big fan of Bitter Southerner, a big fan of Wendell Brock. And he kind of talks a little bit about your childhood, and you know, you said maybe you were a little bit of pain in the ass.
Well,
as a kid.
Yes, as a kid for sure, probably a little bit still. I really got a chance to spend some time with Wendell and kind of tell him my story and tell him about my life growing up. And yeah, I had a pretty tough childhood, and you know, we were an immigrant family coming from Israel. And then my mother and father divorced very shortly after we immigrated here. So my mom really raised us on her own, my sister and I, and she just worked two jobs and around the clock. And I had all of this time on my hands to learn how to cook and also find ways to get into trouble. And that pretty much lasted all the way through high school until I went to culinary school.
And one of the people that you talk a lot about to Wendell is Donna Barnett.
Who, yeah.
Tell me about her and like
so
what she means to you.
Donna was my home economics teacher in high school. And she really was the only teacher, the only adult figure in my life for several years in high school that I listened to, that I looked up to, that had my attention. And I really had so much respect for her ability to like connect on like a personal level, where most like teachers wouldn't even make eye contact with me in high school. She really made the time for me and noticed that I loved to cook and that I had a passion for it. And she helped me get my first job, like in a fancy restaurant. She helped me find my way into culinary school when I didn't think I could afford it, or I didn't think I was smart enough to go. She was really someone that had set a path for me that no one else has ever done. And she's been a huge part of my life ever since. And now her and I have started a foundation together called the Shia Barnett Foundation. And we work with two vocational programs, one in New Orleans and one in Denver. The one in New Orleans is called New Orleans Career Center, and the one in Denver is called the Cherry Creek Innovation Campus. And we are providing support, mentorship, and just helping in any way we can. Either like at New Orleans Career Center, we're donating kitchen equipment to the program. We're going to be mentoring their students. And our goal through the program, or through the foundation, the Shia Barnett Foundation, is that we can really kind of help somebody the way that she helped me when I was in high school, and help children, if they are passionate about culinary arts, find a path forward, help them get into culinary school, and hopefully make a positive impact in somebody's life.
I'm just fascinated that she was your home ec teacher, because I think that a lot of home ec programs have gone away. There's been a few people trying to redefine what home ec can mean. What are some of your memories about your home ec classes with her, and do you think we need to be seeing more home ec come back to schools?
So I'll answer whether or not we need to see more home ec coming back. The answer is yes, and that is exactly like what the foundation is aiming to do, is to continue putting resources towards people in high school that want to become members of the hospitality industry. I remember when I was in high school and I would get kicked out of class, out of like English class or home ec, believe it or not, or whatever else. Like I would get kicked out, or homeroom, not home ec. Yeah, I would get kicked out, and they would send me to Donna's class, to home ec. And Donna would, she kind of worked this deal out with all the other teachers that instead of putting me in detention or suspending me, that they would just send me to her class, and she would be there to figure out what happened and try to get some answers. And so I would walk into her class, and she'd have a big bag of onions, and she'd have me julienne like a 50-pound bag of onions. And I would sit there and cry and tear up the whole time. And she would like get into my head, and really was like a therapist to me, because I was so lost as a teenager, and really was finding ways to cause a lot of stress onto my family and my friends. And I really needed help. And she used those moments to truly help me. I would think that I was getting off easy because I'd get to go hang out in Donna's room and cut onions, which I love to do, versus like going to detention. But she knew that this was really the way that she would get me to listen. And she then, got me a job at a restaurant and made sure that I like showed up on time and that I was dressed the right way. And she would call the chef that I worked for and follow up. So she was like this incredible positive force that I think all teachers strive to be, like to be able to truly make an impact the way that she did. I think that that's every teacher's dream.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's a testament to people that can be that
force for sure
in students' lives. So obviously that profile that Wendell Brock wrote covers you leaving the Best Restaurant Group and everything that happened past that. Not going to get so into it. People should read the profile because it is very well done. But one thing you did say is that it was a blessing in the end. And can you talk about why?
Yeah, I think that we all kind of go through things in life that we have to come out stronger from, and that This was a experience in my life that there was a lot of things that I could have done better. There was a lot of people that I needed to surround myself with that I hadn't been surrounding myself with. And I found some really like amazing, just like an opportunity with my wife, Emily, to start our own hospitality company, which we did, Pomegranate Hospitality, in 2017. And from that point, we were truly able to create a company that was built on core values that we created with our management team, that we that drive what we do every single day at Pomegranate between Saba and Safta restaurants. We operate every day and make decisions and base our schedules and our calendars around these nine core values that include accountability, equality, empowerment, communication, organization, passion and creativity, education. And every day we make decisions based off those nine values. We, like, how do you quantify how you can create passion and creativity within a work team? You know, we thought about that for a long time, and we decided that we would close the restaurants on Mondays and Tuesdays so that people would have a good work-life balance, so that they could reset, so that they could begin channeling their passion and their creativity. You know, we have a director of people and culture, and her name is Susie Dare, and she has been this incredibly positive force for our entire group on how we set these systems up every single day that we all work off of. We you know, education is a very important core value for us, and we host lunch and learns every Wednesday at the restaurant, and our team members are able to come and teach their colleagues something that they're passionate about, whether it's it's been everything from knife sharpening to Beyonce to taxidermy to existentialism and Southern literature to, you know, you name it. Like
all topics that I'm very interested in.
Yeah, like plants. Great. Like people have been coming and teaching about everything.
That's awesome.
And it's a way to empower our team. It's a way to educate our team. And you know, we every day we're talking about these core values and how they can make us a better company every day. And I don't think that I would be at this point in my life right now where I get to do this if it wasn't for what has happened in the past. And I have found this to be an opportunity to just truly make a positive impact and be a good leader and a good support structure for our entire team.
And so, obviously, the first restaurant you opened after leaving Besh was Saba in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then how long after Saba opening did Safta open in Denver?
4 months.
4 months. So pretty rapid.
Yeah, we started Pomegranate in 2017. In March of 2018, we launched the cookbook, Shaya, which took a lot of effort and time to put together, and then of course, you know, promote after the book came out, and that happened in March, and then in May we opened Saba, and then in August we opened Safta. So 2018 was a very busy year, but the incredible thing was that so many of the people that I worked with at Shaya came along and joined our team at Pomegranate right away. So we had an executive team in place with Pomegranate Hospitality 7 months before we opened our first restaurant together. And during that time, we created our mission statement. We created our core values. We built the structure to make those all come alive. We hired Susie onto the team. And we used those 7 months to work really hard on figuring out how to make the most healthy and well-balanced culture we could in the hospitality business.
So next month in August of 2019, Safta, turns a year old.
Yes.
So almost a year in, how is that foundation you've laid? How has that set you up for success? You know, what are the challenges you're facing a year in? What are some things that have gone really well that foundation has made go well?
Well, we've, you know, grown our team to 170 people. Wow. And we have been able to just really, I think, open two incredible restaurants and build a team of people that are just so amazing. And it's been so impressive to see how our team members, as they've joined Pomegranate Hospitality, have really bought into the culture, and how the culture and the health of the culture has grown organically from within. A lot of it, I think, is about setting the tone for people to be able to gravitate towards. And when we open Saba, you know, of course we have challenges every single day, and we have to really rely on the culture that we've created to kind of get through those challenges. And we've had to make a lot of really hard decisions. But like one of the most amazing moments for me when we first opened Saba was that I was standing at the pita oven and one of our cooks had made some type of off-color joke, and the server standing next to the cook said, "Hey, we don't talk that way here." And I just watched the cook like take that information and kind of stand up straight, and it sunk in, and he became one of our most amazing team members that was championing our culture. But you know, he needed that wake-up call, and there was someone there that felt empowered to give him that wake-up call, and that felt like she deserved the respect that would not occur. And before I could even say anything, she had addressed it, and it fixed the thing, just happened organically. And I just felt like that was one of the first steps towards like the culture becoming something that just naturally happens when you bring a lot of great people together. And how through all of this time with opening the restaurants, we've really worked hard on figuring out ways to help our team when they are in need. And we've worked with people through addiction, and we've worked with people to find permanent housing, and we've worked with people to get over their illnesses. And a lot of the benefits that we've set up are there to be able to catch those things as they happen. So we have like an employee assistance program where our team members can get financial, legal, mental health advice for free, and that they can go and seek treatment without having to necessarily involve anybody at work. It's a third party operator. We also provide really good health benefits to our team so that they can go and have babies and be covered, and they can get over illnesses and be able to take time off that they need for themselves. So when I see that stuff really come to life, and I can be a part of somebody's day that is affected by those things positively, it really fills my heart, and it helps me realize that what we're doing is the right thing. And we're challenged every day by it. And there's been times where we've had to let team members go that we really cared for because they were not living up to the values that we set. And those are hard decisions, but our job is to protect the culture and to protect the team as a whole. And that's what we do.
Awesome. So I want to go back a little bit and talk about the book. The book preceded the two restaurants. How was it trying to promote a cookbook while also opening restaurants? It seems like it's something most people don't do simultaneously.
Sure. No, it was a whirlwind. The book, I think I'm really proud of it. I worked with an amazing team, Tina Antolini, who herself has been in podcasts and produced Gravy and then did Pop-Up Magazine and is now on to her own projects with grants behind her that we're all super excited about. Rami Robert was our recipe developer, and she was incredible to work with. We worked with an amazing artist named Francis who did all the illustrations in the book. In the book, when I sat down to write it, I thought, how will I ever get anyone to want to read a book about jambalaya, hummus, and gnocchi? Like, who would pick that book up and want to cook dinner from it? And I sat down and I just started to write, and I found myself just writing my life story about food, because that was the only way that I felt I could kind of make sense of all of those things. So the recipes are written that they follow stories, and those are all written in chronological orders. So there's 26 short stories about kind of my life as a child immigrating to America, the influence that my SAFTA, my grandmother, had on me, my relationship with my father, my relationship with my mother, how I took a lot of really wrong turns and ended up selling drugs and stealing and getting arrested and getting into fights. And I was this very angry teenager. And then how Donna came along and really picked me up and helped me move forward. And then my experience in culinary school, and then my experience in New Orleans, and what Hurricane Katrina, what kind of effect that had on my life. And then moving to Italy and apprenticing out there and coming back and opening Dominica and Pizza Dominica. And then, you know, so like all of these life moments that have been really guided through food in one way or another, line the book, and the recipes blossom from those stories, and the illustrations play into the stories and the recipes. And I think the whole thing kind of came out like this beautiful song, and I'm really proud of it. And it's, I'm happy that I did it. I learned a lot about myself. It was a very self-reflective experience. And I also just got to work with an amazing group of people, Tina, Ramey, Rush, Francis, and my wife, Emily. And it was just incredible.
And I don't think we mentioned this, but what's the name of the book so people can find it?
Shaya. My Journey Back to Israel.
Awesome. So I want to talk a little bit more about, now you're in New Orleans and in Denver. What is splitting time like between those two cities? How do you and your Emily, your wife, how do you manage that?
Yeah, well, it's a two-hour Southwest flight between New Orleans and Denver. It's really not so bad.
Nonstop?
Nonstop.
There you go.
Yeah, and so, you know, we could leave there in the morning and be here by lunch. And we really love spending time in Colorado. It's one of the reasons that this restaurant exists. That Emily and I decided to open SAFTA here because we wanted to follow our pursuit of happiness together. And coming and spending time in Colorado, especially in the summer, was a big deal for us. So we made that become reality by opening SAFTA. And we have a house here and a car here. And we've really gotten a chance to work very closely with different members of the community for different things, like Komal Kitchen. I think you're familiar with it because
yeah.
They're very involved in Slow Foods. And for those who aren't familiar with Komal, it's a incubator kitchen for immigrant and refugee women, and it helps them share and profit from their sales of cooking food through catering and through a restaurant. And it's one of the most inspiring places I've ever been, and it was one of the defining reasons that I came to Denver with Emily in the first place to open up. The way that we manage our time back and forth, we spend it together, and we travel back and forth together, and we really enjoy it. We've actually, you know, she's running the company with me, and she is incredibly smart and has helped Pomegranate become this incredible place for so many people, and I've learned a ton from her.
You can curse on HR.
A shit ton from her. And I think that this, the reason that SABA exists and SAFTA exists, and how Emily and I are able to kind of like continue that reality for ourselves has been such an inspiration and so positive. And I'm very, very, very happy we're getting a chance to do that.
Next, I want to talk a little bit about where you like to eat outside of Pomegranate Hospitality restaurants when you're in both cities.
Yeah. Well, in New Orleans, there's so many great places that I've been going to for well over a decade, close to two decades. Mosca's is one of my favorite restaurants in New Orleans. It's like this old school Italian restaurant outside of the city, and they are famous for their oysters Mosca, which are like oysters that are broiled with breadcrumbs and butter and Parmesan cheese and oregano. It's incredible. And then you put that on top of spaghetti bordelaise, which is like a garlic and parsley spaghetti. And it's one of the best things I've ever had in my life. And then I also love eating at Margie's Grill in New Orleans. It's on Broad Street, and it's not far from where we live. And Chef Marcus is cooking there and sourcing the most amazing local ingredients and serving them up in a way that's light and fresh and very neighborhoody. And Emily and I find ourselves kind of gravitating there a lot to go eat. And then we love eating a ton of Vietnamese food as well. And New Orleans has some of the best Vietnamese food in the country. And so we're at Pho Ta Bai, which is on Tulane Avenue, and incredible beef and chicken pho. And then we also go to a place called Tan Din on the West Bank for their crispy fried tofu with lemongrass and chilies, and their quail with black pepper and lemon, and their pho and their banh mi and all the other great things. So that's New Orleans. And then in Denver, there's a place called Q House that I really love. It's like a modern Chinese Taiwanese restaurant. And there's a chef there that's just making the most incredible food. And I go there a ton. Emily and I go to this place called Sushi Den a lot, which is a local sushi restaurant here. And they fly in all their fish from Tokyo like every day. And it's incredible, kind of like no frills, amazing sushi. We love eating at Komal Kitchen. We go there a lot for lunch. We love eating at Tavernetta and at Mercantile and at Annette Scratch to Table. Chef Caroline Glover just got Best New Chef for Food and Wine. And she's been incredible, and we've gotten a chance to cook together. So there's so many great places. We just can't get to them all. But we eat out. When we do have time to eat out, like we find ourselves going back to these places that we really crave.
And then when you're cooking at home, so going back to the Wendell Brock piece, one of my favorite parts about it was he goes and has red beans and rice. Emily makes red beans and rice, which is one of my favorite things to eat of all time. And
she's the bean queen.
The bean queen. I mean, you can Google it. Google Emily Shia, and it's like, it's about her red
beans
and rice.
Well, she won first place in a red beans and rice cooking competition.
She's the real deal.
She beat out 31 other restaurants and chefs in New Orleans, and 4,200 people voted, and she won first place. So she is officially the bean queen, and we're all very proud of her.
So next time I'm in New Orleans, I'm skipping the restaurants.
Come to our house on Monday night, and you can have red beans and rice.
And it mentioned that Monday is like a traditional red beans and rice night.
Yes,
that's
it is.
Citywide, everyone at home cooks.
That's a New Orleans, Louisiana tradition.
That's
and
so cool.
Monday used to be laundry day. And so we have this tradition where, because it's laundry day, everybody cooks red beans and rice and makes, like, it can stew all day long on the stovetop, and it can be not really tended to because the red beans take like 8 hours to cook. So while your laundry is happening and you're folding laundry, you can have a pot of red beans on the stove. And that was a tradition that the slaves in New Orleans would actually do on Mondays when they would do laundry.
That's fascinating. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And then I know the answer to this question, but what beans are you using?
Camellia red beans. Absolutely. I also, you know, we love to cook at home a lot. We make all kinds of stuff when we're pretty much, you know, shopping at the farmer's market. When we're in New Orleans or here in Denver, there's beautiful farmer's markets. And we go and load up on produce and then kind of cook that up in lots of different ways. I use my Big Green Egg a lot, and I love smoking meats on that and smoking vegetables on that. So, yeah. We get a ton of home cooking in, and I really enjoy it.
So you mentioned Big Green Egg, and talk about some of the more creative dishes that you cook on the egg that people might surprise people.
Yeah. Well, Susie, I was talking about her earlier, our director of people and culture. She's Filipino, and she challenged me to make this Filipino adobo, pork adobo. And so I smoked this pork shoulder with like soy sauce and vinegar and sugar and bay leaves and garlic, and let that kind of smoke all day long for like 12 hours. And as it was cooking, I was just like basting it with this like soy sauce and vinegar sauce. And it just like went all the way into the middle of the meat and just flavored it so beautifully. And I made that with smoked pineapples. And I just took whole pineapples and threw them in there with the pork on the side and let those smoke for 10 hours. And they came out like candy. It was incredible. And then I served that with coconut rice. And that was one of my favorite big green egg dishes that I've made recently.
There's also one involving a pumpkin.
Yeah, I like to cook vegetables whole as much as possible. And in New Orleans, in the fall, we have these beautiful squash and pumpkins. And I took a whole pumpkin and hollowed it out and smoked it and then made stewed greens with like ham hock that cooked down for several hours. And then I stuffed that into the pumpkin and put the whole thing in the smoker for like another few hours and put some breadcrumbs on top. And it was like this whole stuffed pumpkin with stewed collards and mustards. And it was awesome.
There's a picture of that on Instagram.
Yeah.
It looked bonkers. It looks so good. Okay. Well, I think the restaurant's starting to be set up for this dinner.
Yes.
We're so excited. Thank you again for having us. And this interview will be airing on Saturday, although you won't be here this weekend. But we are so excited that you kicked off Slow Food Nations with us.
Thank you for letting us do that. We're honored to be a part of it.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thanks again, Chef Alon Chaya.
Thanks, Kat.
I'm Kat Johnson. This has been HRN On Tour.